Welcome to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you've joined us. Earlier this summer, members of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, the oldest grassroots civil rights organization in the U.S., voted for a resolution that calls for a ban on new charter schools. The resolution will not be finalized until the NAACP's national board takes it up this fall. The resolution cites weak oversight in many charters, over-reliance on exclusionary discipline. It compares charter school expansion in low-income neighborhoods to the predatory lending practices of the subprime mortgage crisis. Here's a quote from the resolution. Quote, the NAACP opposes the privatization of public schools and or public subsidizing of funding of for-profit or charter schools. The NAACP calls for full funding and support of high-quality, free public education for all children. Close quote. The NAACP's resolution also detailed concerns that charter schools contribute to segregation and are governed by privately appointed boards that do not represent the communities served by the school. At a separate convention this summer, the Movement for Black Lives, a group of 50 organizations assembled by Black Lives Matter, also criticized expansion of charter schools. According to data compiled by the news site Education Week, more than 2.5 million students across the United States attend charter schools, about 5% of the country's total public school population. Charter schools in Maryland are nonprofits authorized by local school boards. They are publicly funded and open to any student in the school district. If there's a wait list, students may be chosen through a lottery. The Maryland Alliance of Public Charter Schools puts the total number of charters in the state at 50, with by far the majority, 33 of them, in Baltimore City, followed by Prince George's County with 10 charter schools. The Alliance estimates that nearly 18,000 students in pre-K through 12th grades attend charters. The vast majority of enrollment is of African-American students, while 12% are white and just 5% are Latino. The Baltimore Sun reported that here in Baltimore for the 2013-2014 school year, 14% of all city students attended charters. That's about one out of seven students here in Baltimore. We'd like to understand the critique of the charter school movement that's going on. And later in the hour, we'd like to get a feel for whether this national debate resonates here in Maryland. Ariana Prothero is a reporter for Education Week. She covers charter schools and public and private school choice, so she's on top of what the civil rights groups have been saying and the reaction to it. Ariana Prothero joins us by phone from Texas. Welcome to Midday.
Yes, thank you, Sheila, for having me.
I'm very glad you could join us. Ariana, the NAACP has criticized charters before. What's new now?
Well, this is really their firmest stance, so they've been inching towards the stance over a number of years, but this really represents a line that they've drawn in the sand and their firmest stance to date.
And so so they've never before actually called for an end to authorizing new charter schools?
Right. This moratorium is a new idea, and I think the reason this is really causing a stir and a lot of conversation is that the NAACP and the Black Lives Matter, their calls for charter school moratoriums really highlight fissures among African Americans on charter schools. Now, that being said, you know, there's certainly never been uniformity of opinion on charter schools among African Americans, but I think maybe those differences in opinions weren't really understood by a lot of people, and that this is coming somewhat as a surprise to maybe the larger education community. That said, these are also, you know, these are forceful, important organizations, and what they say matters and does resonate within these communities.
Well, tell me more about the substance of the critique of these civil rights organizations of the charter school movement. What do they say is wrong?
They highlighted a number of things. So certainly, and a lot of these critiques are things that have, you know, been coming up and discussed frequently within the charter sector, outside the charter sector. You know, they talked about discipline practices. Charter schools have often been accused of having stricter discipline practices. They discussed weak oversight. There are certainly issues nationally in some states with fairly weak oversight of charter schools. Again, that varies very much based on where you are and the type of law that governs charter schools in your state. They also talked about segregation. They said that charter schools are contributing to the segregation of public schools in America. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, they also discussed the issue that charter schools are not directly run by publicly elected officials, and that the movement or the expansion of charter schools is taking the power of education away from communities.
Yeah, part of their critique is the quote that I read from the resolution is particularly about focusing money instead of on charter schools. That all the tax money, the tax funding of education should be in public schools controlled by local school boards and by states, which of course has been a critique of charter schools from the beginning. But it makes me wonder: is there any amelioration of some of the other points that you just detailed for us that would actually satisfy these critics of charter schools? Is there any version of charter schools that would not pull money from the rest of the public school system?
That is a good question. I think that would really depend upon the critic that you're asking. The critics, again, similar to the critics of charter schools are, again, not uniform in their critiques of charter schools. They have different reasons why they don't like them. It may be because charter schools are largely ununionized. They don't, for the most part, hire union teachers. It may be because, as you mentioned, they take public money, and people see that as taking needed and necessary resources away from their traditional district schools. I don't know if there is a single answer to critics as a whole. I don't know if there's a single fix that could make charter schools acceptable in their opinions. I think it really depends on the person levering the critique. In this case, looking at the NAACP, if there was some way, I guess, if charter school boards were elected instead of appointed, the individual boards for each school, then maybe that would go some distance in making the NAACP more comfortable with charter schools. But ultimately, I don't know if there's any one way that you could change charter schools that would allow them to still be charter schools and still make them acceptable to some of the groups that are against them.
That is Arianna Prothero, reporter for Education Week, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about critique of the charter school movement by NAACP and the Black Lives Matter movement. You can join this conversation. Do your children attend public schools or charter schools? If you decided on a charter, why did you make that decision? Call and tell us about it. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Our email address is midday@wypr.org. One of the critiques in the NAACP resolution is that charter schools contribute to segregation. That's obviously something we're going to discuss with our Maryland guests a bit later in the hour. But tell us what the racial makeup of charter students looks like across the country.
Yes, absolutely. So EdWeek actually did a recent analysis. Our research center did a recent analysis of federal data. And what we saw, and again, this is a national picture looking at state-level data, that Black students make up about 28% of charter school enrollment nationally, but only about 15% of non-charter public school enrollment. So there's definitely a concentration of African-American students in charter schools. The numbers are very different if you look at white students. I think they're about 50%. They make up about 50% of non-charter enrollment. Interestingly, when you look at Latino students, the breakdown, the number, the percentage of Latino students enrolled in charter schools and enrolled in non-charter schools is fairly even. It's about 23 and 25%.
Are there states where there's a pretty distinct racial gap in who is attending charter schools?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you see it in Tennessee, you see it in Louisiana, I think to a certain extent Maryland. It is interesting. You know, we're not really sure what's driving that, but certainly in the states where you see that gap in enrollment are states that have policies or places where local schools were taken over or local districts were taken over by the state, or maybe the state started a special statewide district specifically for turning around poorly performing schools. And that's certainly the case in Tennessee and Louisiana, both places where you have a state-run district that is taking over poorly performing district schools and often converting them into charter schools in order to try to improve performance. In those states, you have high percentages of African American students enrolled in charter schools.
A key part of the criticism in these resolutions is about governance, about the makeup of many charter school boards not representing the local community. Again, we'll talk to our Maryland guests about how that looks here, but what is the picture nationally? Is this something that varies a great deal by state?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I think that's a very interesting point, and there's a lot of gray area. So, again, you know, as you mentioned, it varies very much by state, and it varies by basically who can authorize charter schools or what are the groups that are allowed to basically allow charter schools to open. So in a lot of states, public districts, school districts, are actually allowed to authorize charter schools, and I believe that's the case in Maryland. So in that sense, you know, you could argue that there is a certain amount of elected oversight of charter schools. Now, maybe it's not direct. Charter schools are run individually by small nonprofit appointed boards, so they're not elected. But a level up, you do have elected officials. In some states, it may be a state education chief. In other states, there can be groups that open charter schools or authorized charter schools that are not publicly elected. For instance, they may be a university or a nonprofit. So in those instances, you have to get several levels up before you start seeing some sort of elected control or oversight of charter schools. So the critique that charter schools do not represent the community, or perhaps more accurately, the critique that charter schools are not held accountable to locally elected officials, really varies by where you are, and not only just what state you're in and what the law is, but also whether your charter school is being authorized by a locally elected school board, or if it's being authorized by a mayor, or if it's being authorized by a university or a nonprofit.
You mentioned a few minutes ago, I'm going to need to let you go here in a minute, but you did mention that these resolutions have caused quite a stir. Give me a sense of what the reaction has been and what you see going forward.
Well, again, you know, there are plenty of strong charter school supporters within the Black community who have definitely come out and said, although we really respect the NAACP and everything that they do, we very much disagree with them on this issue. I think the bigger question than what makes this interesting is, I mean, as we discussed, Black students make up a significant chunk of enrollment of charter schools, and any major erosion of support among African Americans for charter schools would certainly impact the sector. So I think the question moving forward is, how much will the NAACP and Black Lives Matters, how much will their stances on charter schools affect overall opinion of charter schools among African Americans?
Interesting thought. I really appreciate your walking us through this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Arianna Prothero covers education. She's a reporter at Education Week. As I said, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, what are your thoughts on charter schools? Are they a needed alternative to public schools? Are they doing enough to diversify their student bodies? You can be part of this conversation. You can phone us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email, midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Kast. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. This summer, the NAACP and the Movement for Black Lives both called for a halt to new charter schools, expressing concerns about targeting low-income, predominantly minority communities, concerns about a lack of diversity in charter enrollment and in charter boards that are appointed rather than elected. So today we're discussing how the issue of charters and school choice plays out in Maryland and in Baltimore, where the majority of charters in Maryland are located. I'm joined now here in studio by Jason Botel.
Yes.
Is that how to pronounce
That's
it?
Right.
Jason
Thanks.
Botel is Executive Director of the Education Advocacy Group Maryland CAN, and he's founding principal and executive director of KIPP Baltimore. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us by phone is Davon Love, former charter school teacher and director of public policy for the grassroots think tank Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Hey, Davon.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
I'm glad you could join us. And so let me just underscore both of your experience in charters. Davon, you taught in a charter school.
Correct, for 2 years.
And about when was that? And which school?
At Connections, which is a school operated by the Baltimore Teachers Network, for academic year 2011-12 and 12-13.
And Jason Botel, you started as a teacher also?
Yes, I actually started out teaching at a traditional public school, Booker T. Washington Middle School in West Baltimore. I taught there for 3 years, and then I went on to found KIPP Baltimore, a public charter school and public charter school operator here in Baltimore, and I now sit on the board of KIPP.
You're on the board of KIPP?
Yes.
And how long were you principal?
I was a principal for 4 years, and then I moved into an executive director role. I was in that role for 7 years, so a total of 11 years of leading KIPP Baltimore.
So I think you've got very different attitudes toward this discussion that has erupted over the summer. Davon Love, let me start with you. What do you think of these resolutions from the NAACP and the Movement for Black Lives?
Well, I think there needs to be a conversation about the purpose of the innovation, particularly around the idea of public charters. So the fear is that you have your kind of traditional neoliberal, white-controlled-led nonprofits coming into predominantly black communities, being able to operate institutions that aren't accountable to community. And so I think a part of the concern is that, you know, if public charters serve as a mechanism for advancing the power of folks outside of communities to make decisions about education in predominantly black communities, then that's an issue. Now, I think there are ways to think about and to imagine public charters being a useful innovation in how to construct education differently, given the struggles with working with the large bureaucracy of education districts around the country, and in Baltimore in particular. But I think the fear that I share is that the public charter movement really could be an entryway into creating a parallel education system in Baltimore that primarily serves white folks and are able to have access to more resources than the neighborhood schools that primarily serve black folks.
Jason Botel, how do you react to both what Davon said and what the public national conversation has been this summer?
Well, I certainly agree with Davon that there needs to be a national conversation. And you know, I very much respect Davon's work, and I've heard him speak and have read things he's written. And I will say that I'd say a couple things. First of all, public charter schools, I think, are very accountable to the communities of students that they serve in that they're schools of choice. And so if parents are not happy with the schools, with public charter schools where they send their students, they can withdraw them at any time. And the ability to choose a school at all, which we know, unfortunately, disproportionately white families have had the opportunity to choose schools in our country, especially families with means who can choose private schools. Public charter schools in Baltimore and other places around the country are often serving communities that have not had options in education. And so they are providing options. And again, they're options that parents can choose or not choose. Right now, you have tens of thousands of African-American children who are on waiting lists for public charter schools around the country. And so these are families saying, we want to exercise this option. And so if there's a moratorium on expanding all public charter schools, including high-performing ones, then that's basically just shutting the door to all of those families that have indicated officially that they'd like to enroll their children in those schools. What I think we need to confront is that the reality is public education in the United States, like many of our institutions, was really developed at a time when white supremacy was the law. And public education, like many of our institutions, even with the best of intentions at times, has perpetuated inequities. Are there public charter schools that perpetuate inequities? Absolutely. And in those cases, those charters should be revoked. But, the evidence is pretty clear that public charter schools in the aggregate in urban areas around the country have actually been a major value add in terms of African-American achievement. So a study that's frankly often quoted by both sides of this issue, 2015, there was a study done by Credo, which is a part of Stanford University. What they found is that across 41 urban regions, on average, African-American students in public charter schools achieve the equivalent of 36 additional days of learning growth in math. And by the way, for African-American students in poverty, that was 59 more days. So essentially, they learned 2 more months worth of math than their counterparts in traditional public schools. And that number is 26 additional days of growth in reading. So I think the evidence is clear that
let me jump in. I don't want to put too much on the table before we have a chance to talk about it, and also to talk with our listeners who are calling us. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You just heard Jason Botel, Executive Director of the Education Advocacy Group, Marilyn Cann, former Principal and Executive Director of KIPP Baltimore, here on Midday on WYPR. And on the phone with us is Davon Love, a former charter school teacher and Director of Public Policy for the grassroots think tank Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Davon Love, it does seem to me that when Jason Botel says, hey, these are schools of choice, if parents didn't want to be sending their children to them, they wouldn't, and the schools would dry up. That seems like kind of a killer argument. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think a part of the issue is that if we look at the institutions in community that are born from folks over from the community, oftentimes, in order to have access to resources to erect an institution like a school, you need certain kinds of relationships, access to wealth, usually access to philanthropy in the traditional nonprofit sector. And unfortunately, there are folks in community that don't have those relationships or access to the kind of wealth necessary to be able to start a school, or had relationships to get access to the resources to start a school. And so I understand the argument that there are, that parents have a choice of where they send their students, but the choices that we have available to us are rendered in a particular sense fixed by a certain set of the types of individuals that can start schools in a lot of communities. So the point that I want to make is that there are schools in our communities that are community-based that don't have access to those kind of resources. So there's Inseroma in West Baltimore, which is a private school. The school that has an African-centered pedagogy and paradigm in terms of how, it teaches the children. It's very effective. A lot of folks in community send their children there. Unfortunately, a lot of people can't afford to send their children there because it costs money to operate a school, and they don't necessarily have the kinds of relationships, access to wealth, access to the things they need to create a public charter to make it more affordable to the folks in the community. So what I'm saying is that the idea of a public charter, if you had folks up and from the community that wanted to charter a school in a community that's predominantly Black, in Baltimore, and they were the folks that were on the board and that they had the kind of expertise to start a school, I think those are the kinds of things that would make a school actually accountable to community. But what we have is that our communities are subject to entities that aren't birthed from the community. So the only options we have are people connected to the kind of nonprofit neoliberal establishment in terms of rendering service. And they may be able to do some effective things in certain cases with certain students. But if we look at it systemically, we need to invest in the community's ability to take leadership in the education arena and not having to take orders from folks outside of the community who may mean well, but aren't folks up and from the community.
Let me get Jason Botell's reaction to that. I mean, it seems to me, I don't mean to put words in the very articulate argument that Davon Love just made, but essentially, the fewer resources we put in the hands of the public schools, the harder it's going to be for those schools to be good schools.
Well, I support everything Davon just said. You know, I agree that we should be investing in leadership in communities in Baltimore. There are talented educators and people with great expertise, obviously, in the communities where students live. And we should be doing everything we can to recruit those folks onto public charter school boards, to recruit those folks to start public charter schools. And, you know, I would support any effort, you know, in our case, and I was listening to Ariana talk about the landscape of boards and authorizers around the country. Under Maryland law, the Baltimore City Board of School Commissioners is the only entity that can authorize public charter schools. And I think they do look at, you know, I've been involved on the New and Charter School Advisory Board at the school system in years past. They do look at to what extent applicants to start public charter schools have deep relationships in communities, are tied to communities, and I would encourage them to continue to do that. And I think that to go a step further, and I think what Davon's suggesting is I'd love to see them more proactively recruit organizations and individuals in communities to start public charter schools. I'm all for that.
Let's talk to some of the folks who have called us. Hillary called us from Baltimore. Hillary, welcome to Midday.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you.
Your comment?
Hello? Sorry. Yes, hi. I'm calling because I've been both a founder of a charter school and a teacher and a parent at numerous charter schools, both in rural and urban areas, D.C., Baltimore, and in Massachusetts. And the one I helped start was in Frederick. It was the first one in Maryland. It's Monocacy Valley Montessori. And I think what I understood with charter schools was that they were supposed to be laboratory schools for the U.S. government. The first time I had my youngest son go to one in the year 2000 in Massachusetts, and that one was actually a true grassroots charter school with parents that started it and asked for the charter and wrote it and was ran by the parents. And no, it didn't have oversight by the because of Massachusetts law, didn't have oversight by the local school board, but it did provide a alternative education to what was there in the area. And so when I moved back to Maryland, we did the same thing. The Monocacy Valley Montessori was also a true, I feel, charter that provided an education choice to families that wasn't being offered in the district. But in Baltimore and in D.C., as a parent and a teacher, I've had such different experiences because they were more like, I know that they were nonprofits, but they were corporate-based charter schools. One was through Marriott in D.C., and
so,
one was
Hillary,
in classrooms.
I need to kind of get to, it sounds to me then that you're saying that with all your experiences, it sort of makes sense to put the brakes on right now and take a new look at charters?
No, I would say no. I would not, but I do agree that it needs to be looked at what has taken place. I don't necessarily think that the brakes need to be put on because I do think there's a lot of good going on in some of the charter schools, but I do know there is a lot of corruption, and I do agree that they aren't some of the schools aren't necessarily pulling people and parents from the community to really build the school. So I think it's a mixed bag, and that's the problem, and I don't think the government is doing what they intended by really using the information to make really our public school system better, because that's, I think, the real problem and why people want to have these charter schools, because the public school system, I taught in Baltimore City at Patterson High as well, I mean, it is broken. It is broken, and it is far easier to get your child into a charter, or for some people to start a charter, to like give your kids what they need, as opposed to putting them somewhere that they're unsafe every day. Like, it's
Hillary, you make a lot of good points. I appreciate your calling. Davon Love, what goes through your mind when you hear Hillary's points?
Well, I mean, like I said in the beginning, I think the idea of a public charter is an interesting innovation in looking at how to circumvent the bureaucracy of the education district in the way that it's really stifled progress, you know, over the past several decades. Again, I think the key is to make sure that public charters don't become a mechanism by which folks outside the community come in and are able to make a living off of creating institutions that are supposed to primarily affect the lives of Black and poor folks.
Do you think that is happening in Maryland? And what specific step would you suggest to stop it?
Well, I would argue that a lot of the leadership on public education in Baltimore is led by organizations controlled by white folks that are outside of the community and that don't have mechanisms of accountability to Black folks in community that have been organizing and doing work in community for years. And I think that speaks to a cultural divide where, you know, you have folks that, again, mean well, but are able to get access to resources and institutional credibility without having to really go to community and get that kind of buy-in. And so until we actually substantively address that and we look at the leadership around education policy and making sure it's reflective of the community, then I would argue that we do need to, you know, stop, you know, giving charters to public charter schools until that's rectified.
Jason?
Well, again, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Davon's saying. I think where I may have a somewhat different view is you have some cases where there are public charter schools leading children to achieve at very high levels. And by the way, you have cases of schools that were started by African-Americans in communities. One school that comes to mind is Empowerment Academy in West Baltimore, which has just gotten phenomenal results with their students. You know, in my case, if I look at how KIPP's doing, you know, being on the board, and not to say we don't have room for improvement, but both in Baltimore and nationally, the percentage of our students, the number of our students who are graduating from high school, who are going on to college, and who are graduating from college so far exceeds the norm that to not allow more schools like that to open would just do a disservice and injustice, I think, to many children who are in need of that quality of education and don't have access to it. So, I mean, I just think there's a nuance here. I am all for finding ways, and I think there are ways to have better policy to not allow low-performing schools or schools. I mean, I certainly agree. Look, there's corruption in traditional public schools and there's corruption in public charter schools, and we should all be committed to stamping that out. At the same time, we should be advocating for policies that lead to the expansion of schools that are getting great results for kids, particularly historically underserved kids.
We need to take another quick break here. Lots more people want to be part of this conversation, and we will do that when we come back. More about charter school debate. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about charter schools. There's a big national debate about whether charter schools are good for children, especially children in the inner city. In an hour or two, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is going to be speaking at a charter school in Cleveland. Donald Trump has called for more charter schools, and as we have been discussing, the NAACP and the Movement for Black Lives are both calling for a moratorium on new charter schools. I'm speaking with Davon Love, former charter school teacher, director of public policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, and Jason Botell, executive director of the education advocacy group Maryland CAN and former principal of KIPP Baltimore. He now serves on the board of KIPP Baltimore. You can be part of this conversation. You can email us at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Joe has phoned us from Central Baltimore. Joe, welcome to Midday.
Hello. I have commented. I've heard all the conversations so far. I agree with Mr. Love. Actually, he's a. I knew him when he's a little kid. He's grown up to be a wonderful leader of men today. But I wanted to say that one of the things that it's a political strategy. I'm a school teacher in Baltimore. And you ask the question, why do you need charter schools? The answer is that other schools are failing. So why not help the schools that are failing instead of having charter schools. Because here's what happens. You take the cream of the crop from the public school and you get into charter schools. Because charter schools can't walk up to the door and say, I'm enrolled in charter school. They choose the students who are the best. And that would predict why you're graduating more. You're coming to a school like my school, which is a very impoverished area. You take the students who excel the most, you take them out of my school and you take them to your school, and I'm glad they're getting extra help. But let's find a way to find money to help all the students. And as Mr. Love pointed out, I've been, again, as a teacher in Baltimore State for 25 years, you go to events like the symphony, the professional theater, center stage. You go to events, and I've taken kids to events, and you see that somehow in Baltimore City, most of the audience who is supposed to be from Baltimore City, because their programs are called Baltimore City Program, and you look in the audience, and most of them are from charter schools or private schools or outside of Baltimore. There are many resources that a regular Baltimore City school can't get that who need it. These kids need it more so than the kids who have things like that at home, like in the private schools. But my point is,
Joe,
there's an unfair advantage that charter schools get.
I appreciate you raising that point, Joe. Jason Botel, what do you say to this argument that charter schools cream the crop?
Well, I'd say a couple of quick things. One is there have been multiple studies, both locally and nationally, that it's just not the case that the children going to public charter schools are, on the whole, higher performing students when they enter. And there have been studies that have shown, even controlling for factors like that, the value added by public charter schools is substantial. What I will say is I do think we should all be working to make sure that every parent actually has the option to send their kids. When I was at Kip Baltimore, we used to go door to door in the Park Heights community to fill out applications with parents so that we were going to them. In other cities like Newark, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., there is a citywide enrollment process, not just for charters, but for the traditional public schools as well, so that every parent, it's very easy for them to apply. We have not done that yet in Baltimore, and I would be very interested in an effort to make it much easier for all families to have access and know how to apply to schools.
Zach is calling us from Timonium. Zach, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I would like to comment that and really take this a step further. I think that charter schools should be abolished. Personally, I think this whole process has been engineered by a particular group of people in order to create an institution from which to profit. There's no reason to have charter schools. No children should be getting one standard of education while others get another. What we should do is fix the public schools. Now, if these people want to be involved in work at the public schools, they can run for the board and they can help change public school policy instead of creating a private institution that receives public money.
Zach, I appreciate the call. Davon Love, let me pull you in here. There are those who would say, if the public schools had proven themselves at all capable to the task, we wouldn't have the flourishing of charter schools in Baltimore.
Well, I think the idea of the public charter is a reasonable response to the failure of the bureaucracy of the Baltimore School District historically in its ability to deliver effective education. I think there are a whole host of political reasons as to why the bureaucracy has been affected that we don't have time to get into. I think the issue is that we can't go from one extreme to another, that we shouldn't see the ineptitude of the school district historically as a rationale why we should reject support nonprofit entities being able to come in our communities and take control of the nature, the way that education is situated, you know, in Baltimore, because you have communities that are quite frankly historically been more effective at educating children. You know, black people, black institutions that are of and from the community traditionally have had better outcomes in educating black children to address the concerns of our communities. And so if the public charter movement doesn't focus and emphasize on building capacity of folks in community to operate educational institutions to educate our own children, then we have to ask ourselves then what actually is the purpose of the movement. If the purpose of the movement is to provide better education, then we should invest in the community's ability to provide that education And what I fear is that currently what's happening is that the public charter movement has the potential to go in a movement where we're allowing folks that aren't ever from the community outside of the school district to be able to make decisions about the trajectory of education in our community.
Jason, you want to jump in?
Again, I agree with a lot of what Davon's saying. I think the direction he is advocating for, that public charter schools and those who support them, start to invest in communities to start public charter schools, to run public charter schools, to educate children. I'm all for all of that. The other thing I would just say is there is not a city in the country, unfortunately, where a traditional public school system has gotten significantly better without the existence of a public charter school sector. You have cities like Boston and Washington, D.C., where not only do you have high-performing public charter schools, but the school districts themselves have gotten better. And I think that kind of a portfolio approach where there are multiple approaches to improving public education is what's working in places, and that's what we should continue to cultivate here in Baltimore.
Kimberly has called us from Baltimore. Kimberly, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I'm also a public school teacher at a traditional public school, and I want to preface my comments with the statement that I don't want this to come across as, you know, negative toward teachers at charter schools. I think everyone is trying to work really hard to do what's best for kids. And it's also not against parents who send their kids to charter schools because, again, everybody wants what's best for their kids. But I think that if we properly funded public schools and if we stopped over-testing children and allowing politicians to set policies that are not what's best for kids, that we wouldn't need charter schools. I also think that if charter schools are able to do creative things that we know are working, then we should stop putting these laws in place that make it impossible to do those same things at public schools. So if smaller class sizes are more effective, we need to be able to have the funding to do that at public schools. If a different approach is possible at a charter school, but we don't have time in the school day to do that at a public school because we're so busy testing the children to meet federal mandates, then we need to get rid of the federal mandates that require us to do that. So I think that charter schools often do offer great choices for kids because they're able to get out of some of the requirements that traditional public schools have to live up to. And I also am really concerned about the fact that charter schools often pull kids out of their communities. So we're essentially deconstructing schools in neighborhoods. We're taking kids out of their neighborhoods and making it harder for parents to access the schools, for kids to be getting getting a good education in their home neighborhood.
Kimberly, thank you for all those points. Jason, how would you respond to Kimberly?
Well, two things I would say. One is, on the last point, again, these are always schools of choice. And if parents don't want to send their kids to another community, they don't have to. There are reasons why some parents may be particularly interested in sending their kids to spend time in other parts of a city. And just as, again, white and well-resourced families have that option, I think all families should have that option, whether they choose to exercise it or not. Where I certainly agree with her is that we should be finding ways, the things that are working in public charter schools, we should be finding ways to replicate those things in traditional public schools. And one thing I'd say in particular, another thing we do at Maryland Can, public charter policy is part of it, but we've developed a model called student-centered budgeting that really takes what works. And I think this even gets to Davon's point. I mean, public charter schools have a lot more autonomy over the funding that's allocated to them. We think that school family councils and traditional public schools should have some of that same autonomy. And so we think you have a funding approach that's working in some schools. Let's make that a funding approach in more schools.
Matthews is calling us, and we have just a few minutes left. Matthews, can you make your point quickly?
I just wanted to just say a few comments with regard to charter schools versus Baltimore and Washington. Washington has the second strongest legislation as it relates to charter schools in Louisiana. Baltimore's charter schools come under Baltimore Public Schools, and there's no way that they're going to be able to compete in the same manner because you have persons that are funding and responsible for them that are directing public schools. So there's a great difference there. The other thing is that you have to have parent participation heavy. In Washington, D.C., there's a charter school called Achievement Academy. It's in the projects. the parents sign contracts. Their kids go to school greater time than any of the charter schools in D.C., and they perform because they impact those kids over a greater portion of the day. Parents have to get involved. Teachers are going to have to get involved because teachers have a part in the process, too. But legislation is going to play a great role in the development of charter schools in areas where you don't have strong legislation.
Matthews, I appreciate your making those points. Davon Love, we have just a couple minutes left. Do you want to respond to his points about the underlying law and the tension in what the school board, a local school board in Maryland, needs to pay attention to, both the charters it authorizes and the public schools it's responsible for?
Well, I think ultimately people in community need to have the institutional power, capacity to be able to chart the direction of their own educational experience for their children. And so I think a part of the issue is that if community doesn't have meaningful institutional power over my understanding of the legislation, which is an alternative authority that would charter schools that would be separate from the school board, we have to ask ourselves the question, who actually is going to have the institutional power to make those decisions? You know, as much as Kip may have been able to do, as an example, for certain children in certain schools, you know, I don't think that the community wants Kip to be the one driving the education agenda, you know, of Baltimore City, right? That we want institutions that are run and operated by folks from the community to drive that. And to whatever extent that Kip fits into that vision, that community charts for itself, then that should be the nature of how that operates. But it's important that when we look at leadership of education and we look at the issues we have with the district, it's important that whatever issues we have with the district don't cause us to result in a public charter school movement that isn't led by folks of the community. Because if that's the direction, then it's going to undermine the ability to have effective education.
Davon, let me give the last 30 seconds to Jason Botel.
Well, I think we're getting into some really important nuances here. I mean, there's been talk about D.C. for a moment, and the thing about D.C. is D.C. is a place where there is a traditional public school district and a chartered school sector, both of which are under the control of the mayor. And that's the governance structure there. It's a very different one from the one we have here. I certainly agree with the last caller that our law leaves a lot to be desired in Maryland, and there are better laws. There are also bad laws in other places. So to me, this is about improving public policy, and that's something we should all be invested in, improving public policy for both public charter schools and traditional public schools.
We are flat out of time, and I am grateful to you both. Jason Botel, Executive Director of the Education Advocacy Group Maryland CAN, Founding Principal and Executive Director of KIPP Baltimore in the past, now on the KIPP board. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Davon Love, former charter school teacher, Director of Public Policy for the grassroots think tank Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Thank you. Also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today, a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features sandwiches, salads, specials each day, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. And I want to thank you for listening. I hope you'll be back with us tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.